And with the familiar tones of AC/DC, you and I begin another episode of Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nason. It is Sunday, June 22nd, 2025. I come to you coast to coast, from the North Pole to the South Pole, from the beaches to the sticks, every single day on WrestlingObserver.com, of course, the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, all of our over-the-air affiliates, AM and FM. Kids, you don't know what that means. Ask your parents. Apps like iHeart, TuneIn, everywhere you get a signal in this fine world, you can hear my voice, and I thank you for tuning in today. Special shout-out to those listening on the American Forces Network. We thank you for your service each and every day, especially thinking of you at this time, given all the craziness in the world. You wake up to something new every single day. So just please, we think about your safety and hope everything turns out good for all of us, frankly. I'm going to be with you for the next hour once again, filling in for the one and only Andrew Zarian, talking about some of the big news of the week, news of the last 24 hours. Of course, yeah, lots of stuff going on. A little bit different episode today, because I'm going to go PTI style, pardon the interruption style. I'm going to hit on, I believe, 14 topics over the next hour, about 2 to 3 minutes per topic. I have everything timed out here. We're going to talk about, of course, the quote-unquote pipe bomb segment from Friday's SmackDown, John Cena and CM Punk. I hope CM Punk has woken up from being put through that Slim Jim table. We're going to talk about Collision from Saturday, which featured the return, surprise return of Kota Ibushi, some of TK's fetishes. Not those kind of fetishes, but multi-man matches, multi-person matches, and why this guy can't announce a card more than like 24 hours in advance. Of course, we're going to talk about WWE and Saudi Arabia coming up this Sunday, and are things going to be changed around due to what's going on in the world? Some TNA news, I promise. We're going to talk about Steph and Nick, John Jones retiring, all kinds of other stuff as well. 14 topics, rapid fire, so stick around after this. We'll get right to it. Wrestling Observer Live, come right back, please. Welcome back, Wrestling Observer Live, for Sunday, June 22nd. A lot to get to. So as promised, 14 topics, less than an hour. Let's start out with John Cena and CM Punk. Right, of course, some of the big news coming out of the weekend in pro wrestling was Friday as they build to Night of Champions, which comes up this Saturday afternoon Eastern time, I should say. Saturday afternoon Eastern time. And from Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. So once again, WWE heading overseas. We have talked about, of course, CM Punk's inclusion in this, given his past aversion with going to Saudi Arabia. That's been talked to death. But let's talk about this quote-unquote pipe bomb promo that John Cena delivered on Friday night on SmackDown to close your show. Of course, had the R-Truth match and in a DQ, which seems like all WWE TV shows do so frequently these days and always have. So that ends in a DQ. R-Truth disappears off the face of the earth. And then CM Punk comes out and confronts John Cena. And then John Cena getting the best of CM Punk, putting him through the Slim Jim table, and then delivering this quote-unquote pipe bomb promo. CM Punk had to lay there prone, dead, eyes closed for what felt like, I don't know, 2 hours. And I listened to this. I watched it on YouTube, as a lot of people did. I believe over 1 million views to this point, which, of course, makes me think, why does anyone watch any of these shows when you can watch all the stuff you just want to check out on YouTube the next day, and usually pretty quick after? You can get through it in, like, probably, I don't know, 15 minutes, something like that. Topic for another day. Anyway, you know, again, the tie-in here, of course, that CM Punk's famous pipe bomb promo back in 2011 happened after a tables match between John Cena and R-Truth, which was, again, a nice little tie-in. I like those things. And, yeah, overall, yeah, it was, you know, he tried to be cute. Again, very, John Cena does deliver lines. I don't think he delivers them convincingly. I enjoy him in some stuff when it comes to his acting career. Didn't, you know, some of the wrestling promos just sound just so like he's reading off a teleprompter. Five Microphones of Doom, of course, the big thing, you know, mentioned Claudio Castagnoli, Nick Nemeth, and Matt Cardona, of all people. And they're really kind of leaning into this thing of CM Punk being so conflicted about going to Saudi Arabia. And he actually had some good lines in this. Overall, this did not bother me as much as it bothered some people, or just didn't like it. But it was, again, CM Punk just laying there prone, dead for... but felt like hours on end was a sight. But yeah, he pointed out some good things. And the biggest point is John Cena babyface going into Saturday Night of Champions? It certainly feels like it. Talking about, he's basically calling out what Punk is now, a capitalist. He's not the voice of the voiceless. He's not against TKO. Not against TKO is, yeah, TKO. Yeah, Mr. TKO. Tweets are strong, actions are weak, and so on and so forth. So yeah, I guess we're going to have to see in the days ahead and see how Punk responds on probably Monday's Raw or next Friday's SmackDown. And we'll see if we can get a little buzz going for this. I don't think anyone thinks that Punk is going to win, but it's kind of interesting how this plays out. I'm interested in this, but it's something. How about Slim Jim, right? Slim Jim getting that nice sponsorship on the table that CM Punk sat next to for a good amount of time. So chime in on that if you want on social media. I'm on Josh Nason on Twitter/X and also on Blue Sky as well if you're fancy. Let's flip to the next subject, which is AEW Collision. Happened Saturday night featuring the return, like it or not, of Kota Ibushi. Kota Ibushi has been out of AEW, I believe, since, what did I wrote this story last night? He's been out of action since February 2025, but he hasn't been in AEW. Get this. Oh boy, this took me back. November 23, AEW Dynamite. He, Kenny Omega, Chris Jericho, and Paul White defeated Konosuke Takeshita, Brian Cage, Powerhouse Hobbs, and Kyle Fletcher. Yes, that felt like a lifetime ago. And it certainly was. That was when Paul White or Powerhouse Hobbs slammed Paul White on the car. I believe it's the last time that Paul White has been on AEW TV, I guess. I think he's still in a contract. He did, you know, he's done some things with the Jericho Cruise and all that as well. But are you excited about Kota Ibushi coming back? He looked fantastic. Of course, he confronted Kazuchika Okada and the Don Callis family. He's now in the Don Callis family. Okada is. They're running down Kenny Omega. Mark Briscoe came out and said, Kenny Omega has friends too. And he said, I'm not the only one. Out came Ibushi. Again, a bit of a surprise. 43 years old. And again, looked great. He has had a long rivalry and past partnerships with Okada. And the last time they went one-on-one was in the 2021 G1 tournament final that Okada won to a referee stoppage. I believe that is when Ibushi's shoulder went out, if I'm remembering that right. But Kota Ibushi is in this. He's back in AEW, I guess, as part of this build, which makes sense. And his first match is coming up this Wednesday. We don't know against who. I'm going to assume it's against one of the Callis members, and like a Lance Archer or someone more disposable like that. But yeah, Omega, who knows when he'll kind of be back after that vicious attack. But yeah, do you like Kota Ibushi being back? I'm fine with it. However, he did not look great, if you remember. In over the past couple of years, I believe it was the Marufuji match, which was the complete disaster. Forgive me if I'm getting that incorrect. I was there live for Blood and Guts in Boston. Did not look great there. So yeah, it was, I don't know. We'll see. He physically looked good last night and, you know, looked okay, I thought, with his strikes and everything. So we'll see what happens and see if this is a good thing, bad thing. I guess we'll figure it out together coming up. Let's flip to the next subject, which is AEW, of course. And why is it that Tony Khan cannot seem to get a card out for the show, his shows, more than like 24 hours to maybe 36 hours in advance? And I mention that because AEW Collision was in Kent, Washington. We're going to talk about Arena Mexico in a few minutes, but they had, you know, a really nice audience last Wednesday. And they said, hey, by the way, we're back live in our normal slot for Saturday, AEW Collision. Kent, Washington, Brian Alvarez, shout out to him. And there was no matches announced. And then I believe it was in the overnight hours from Friday night. Yeah, it was Friday night, because I woke up on Saturday morning and saw that, I think it was around like 4 in the morning Eastern, that a John Moxley and AR Fox match was announced for this card. And there was other stuff just announced overnight. And I just don't understand this. And then last night I'm watching Collision, and the only thing announced for this Wednesday, also in Kent, Washington, maybe Tony Khan is just anti-Kent. Maybe it's an anti-Brian Alvarez thing. Who knows? I mean, he just turned 50. Anyway, only thing that's announced is Kota Ibushi's return. So he's kind of hoping that the brand itself is going to be good enough to have people come out. But it's not like a WWE where, you know, certain people are always going to be in the show no matter what. even if they're not competing, they're at least going to do some sort of appearance or something like that. So if you leave the building that night, you're thinking, oh yeah, I saw this and this and this, and definitely, you know, I saw moments and promos and things like that, and get the vibe, whatever. But AEW, like, I have no idea when Kenny Omega is going to be back, and that's part of kind of the surprise of wrestling, but you just, there's no guarantee some certain people are going to be there. So you're going to have to hope these people that just went last night are also going to want to go Wednesday. But at this point, are they just banking on the fact that people are going to buy tickets the day of? I don't know. I mean, I just think of, like, myself, a wife and a kid, and I have to, like most of us, have to plan things ahead, especially if you're driving or visiting place, things like that. And if you're a single guy or a single girl, and you're just like, oh, I'm going to go by myself, or, you know, even if you go with friends, you have to try to align everything, what time you're getting there, eating before, all this stuff. I don't think AEW is that strong a brand where they can just say, hey, AEW is coming to town, and you know no matter what that you're going to get some of these stars. You're going to get great wrestling. You always do. But I don't know. I just think I just don't understand why these matches are announced ahead of time. Is it because he's booking on the fly last second? Well, before, he's talked about this new booking technique, he talked about it with Mark Maron years ago, and it was just, you know, the notebook and the grid and all that stuff. You remember that? You can do a search on our website for that if you want to find that. But I just don't understand why these matches aren't announced. You're running smaller venues, but it's just, I don't know if it's disorganization. I'm not really sure what it is, but I wish these matches were announced more than 24 hours ahead of time. Let's look and see when Dynamite matches are going to be announced this week. I'm going to guess overnight Monday, probably into Tuesday overnight, and we'll see. Come right back. We're going to talk about WWE in Saudi Arabia, TNA, Arena Mexico, and more. Wrestling Observer Live coming right back after this. Wrestling Observer Live for a Sunday has returned. My name is Josh Nason, contributing editor to WrestlingObserver.com, filling in for Andrew Zarian. I keep messing that up. For Andrew Zarian, who should be back in a few weeks' time. Let's get into WWE in Saudi Arabia. Again, if you're just tuning in to the show, I'm trying to hit 14 topics in less than an hour. So like 3-minute segments, and we're going to fly through them. And we'll talk about WWE in Saudi Arabia right now. So WWE, of course, heading to Riyadh. They are heading out in Tuesday after Raw, because they are doing SmackDown in Riyadh. And the card as of right now, John Cena defending the undisputed WWE title against CM Punk. We talked about that in the open. Brand new U.S. champion Jacob Fatu defending against Solo Sikoa. Intercontinental champion Dominic Mysterio defending against AJ Styles. We'll have the King of the Ring tournament finals, Randy Orton versus either Cody Rhodes or Jey Uso. And Queen of the Ring tournament finals, Asuka versus either Jade Cargill or Roxanne Perez, which will be decided in the days ahead. However, one thing has come up, at least as we're talking about this on Sunday, is WWE still going to be able to go? I'm assuming they are. And the reason, of course, is that United States bombed some nuclear facilities in Iran. Of course, Iran not too far away from Saudi Arabia in that region. And there's some concerns, of course, against retaliation. So don't get all the political machinations and things like that. We talked about politics last week. But talk about safety. Is it safe for them to go? I'm sure they're, obviously, the TKO leadership is very connected to the United States president, Donald Trump, WWE Hall of Famer, and a big UFC fan, so on. Is it safe for people to go? And that has to be paramount, so it's a nice test. If it wasn't safe to go, what would WWE do? I have no idea. I don't think they know. And is it going to be a case of no matter what they're going to go, they're just going to risk it? I don't know. It's always a question. It hasn't been in quite some time, I'll be fair to them, in terms of safety in that region. Of course, we remember way back in the day, the plane ride from hell, so to speak, the other one, the tarmac from hell, when the wrestlers were stuck and their flight delays and there were questions about what was going on and, you know, stories that you've heard before. And I don't know. Again, I'm not in the situation where I have to decide where or not to go, but this is when you hope the WWE leadership really, and TKO leadership really has the talent's best judgment and best intentions in mind, so to speak. Because you don't want to send all these people over there when they potentially could be a target. I don't know about the relations between Saudi Arabia and Iraq, but WWE, they're at this point, I'm assuming they're going to go, and they're going to try to go no matter what, because there's a lot of money on the line. how all the machinations are working behind the scenes for safety. That is something that if I'm a talent, you know, if I'm a John Cena, I'm probably saying, is this good to go? As much as he loves WWE and part of his retirement tour and all that, I mean, he's got a career ahead of him and life, and so many of these other guys do as well. But that's a lot to put on the line if there's a chance and a decent chance of something happening. Some of the track during the week, we'll be following the story, of course, on WrestlingObserver.com and all of our socials on Facebook and X and Threads, things like that. Blue Sky as well. You can find us there. So follow along that story. Let's flip them there to TNA. Some I keep saying I'm going to talk about on the show, but I never seem to get to because there's always so much stuff. And not that TNA, if you're thinking about it. TNA Total Nonstop Action. They want you to watch, and they want you to watch their TNA badly. You know why? Because this past week they added, smartly, I would say, let me get to the story, then I'll explain smartly. So this past week they announced a new free tier for their TNA Plus service, so people can sign up for free. They can watch a limited collection of past TNA events and matches. And to celebrate this new tier, the launch of it, and to get people to check it out, they offered a special live stream this past Friday, and they essentially did a live-to-tape version of their. They're holding TV tapings in Pittsburgh both Friday and Saturday. And so they said, look, check out the service, and on Friday, I'm sure for their paid subscribers, they could do the same thing as well. You could watch the show and before it airs on Thursday. The whole show. So they did it. There was no editing or anything like that. They said, we're going to air it as is. So that was kind of interesting. I have no idea how many people watched it. It was successful and so on. But I do know this is that TNA desperately wants you to watch their product, and they should. There's the TNA Plus, they've adjusted the pricing down on this. And I'm kind of really keen to this because we have to pay for TNA Plus for our recappers to watch and so on. So we're always looking at costs and all those things, and it's interesting with TNA, the linear streaming channel they offer 24/7. I think on Pluto or some of the other services, they have also offered and have for quite some time free content in a 24/7 streaming service. I know that sometimes a month ago before I dropped a traditional cable altogether, or YouTube TV or whatever I had at the time, you go through some of the channels, all of a sudden you see, you know, TNA available on NESN, New England Sports Network, or randomly you find stuff. So they certainly have done a great job of getting their content out there. They just got to get people to actually pay attention to it, which is always tricky in this time. And one of the things that I also were looking at with TNA is they have no pay-per-views or PLEs or anything announced after July's Slammiversary. And I've been very curious about that. And the reason is, why not? And is it a case of they are reassessing, which I'm sure they are? I think usually at this point, they would have announced at least something August or September or something. Or even a Bound for Glory date at this point. And so I'm very curious kind of what is going on. What was their plan behind the scenes? What are they seeing? And they've been obviously, all indications are they're selling their tickets for these shows. The PLEs, the streaming live event, whatever you want to call them. They've been doing pretty well, right? That's what I've been hearing. Are they making money off them? I don't know. Does it make the sense to keep doing them every month? They have to tie them in to most of the times they do a TV taping the next day. Essentially, how is TNA doing from a financial standpoint? And does it fit with the classic wrestling model of doing one event every month? They've been doing the same thing everyone else has, you know, doing some tapings, or at least on their level, doing tapings, holding the live events every month, you know, 4 pay-per-views a year, I believe. And then the others are just, you know, streaming specials on Friday nights. Is it mattering? How's the NXT WWE partnership working for them? I think for WWE, it's working okay. For TNA, is it drawing an audience? Do you have that crossover? Would they even speak up if it wasn't? And that relationship between them and WWE is so interesting. There's this talk of, in the speculation of, you know, is WWE just going to buy them? They could, but as we've seen, they're not really into the archive content. And I think that is a major point of today's content culture, is going back to archive content is just not as much as we thought. In our wrestling space, it is, because people love to go back and watch stuff, check out the old things. Not as much, though, when you're talking about buying archive content just to own it and keep it away from others. But how much value does it have to people? I don't know. You know, on YouTube, you could put it out. I think it's probably what WWE is going to do after this next round of media deals with Peacock and the PLEs and all this stuff. We'll see how that turns out. But I'm going to guess some of the old stuff, like they've been doing, is just going to make its way to YouTube. But where does TNA fit? How are things working for them? And they haven't announced a pay-per-views, PLEs past July. Is that good? Is that bad? Is that planned? I don't know. But I know they want viewers. And they want viewers to check out. They've been airing the PLEs usually a couple days after on YouTube on Wednesday nights. How about that? Red against Dynamite. I don't know if that's the smartest thing. But yeah, they're trying to do their thing and trying to get people to watch and things like that, like offering TV ahead of time, the live channel. They're trying. And just keep an eye on whether these things that they're trying are working and kind of what's possible at this point in 2025. Let's look really quickly at Arena Mexico, AEW, Ring Arena Mexico this past Wednesday. Some quick thoughts. I thought the show was really fun to watch, very easy to watch. I did not think about it until afterwards. They did no backstage promos at all. And I thought the show flowed really well. Maybe that could be a part of it. I think the environment obviously is just, it's a different feel. It is a different, just a different vibe altogether. They did not try to change it to an AEW set, so to speak. I mean, they had their graphics on the screens, but it was undisputably Arena Mexico. And of course, having a lot of CML talent on there, they kept the same ring. It was funny trying to see people get, you try to get under the bottom rope, and the bottom rope is lower than it is in traditional, traditional rings, AEW rings, WWE rings, or whatever. But the, seeing talent after talent try to get under the ropes and have to readjust was pretty funny to watch. But I thought it was great overall. An annual thing, I think they should do without a doubt. I think the whole week, I would guess, was a success from Tuesday on the CML YouTube channel, also Fantastica Mania, on Friday to Wednesday. I think these are the things that AEW can do to be different, and I think they've really leaned into which are different, and that's great for them. And It was a win. Rings were a win. And yeah, the only thing I think they should have announced some other matches for Saturday. But this is international crowds and leading into WWE has been doing it for a while. Everything I think changed after Backlash in Puerto Rico and these starved audiences for wrestling and live wrestling and so on. AEW, they should really take advantage of this European market, I would think. And we'll see what happens with Forbidden Door. And they have the taping in Glasgow, I believe, before, and they should just do a tour of there for a couple weeks. Why not? You know, is it that cost prohibitive? I don't know. But I'd like to see them do more things like that. And this past week was evident that there is there's an appetite for it, and especially for American audiences. We'll be coming right back with more Wrestling Observer Live, a ton more talk about WWE business. John Jones. And look back at Speaking Out, coming back right after this, Wrestling Observer Live. Wrestling Observer Live for Sunday, June 22nd. My name is Josh Nason. Let's get into even more topics. We're doing good. 14 topics, less than an hour. Let me know what you think about this. Hit me up, Josh Nason on X or Blue Sky. Let me know what you think of the format. Are you liking the shows? They're free. I mean, check them out. Spread the word. Helps me out. And yeah, this has been a lot of fun. Filling in for Andrew Zarian for this month. And let's get to some not fun stuff, I guess, is quite a segue there. Stephanie McMahon had WWE president, TKO beloved Nick Khan on her podcast this week. I have not watched any of these. What's your story? I don't love the filtered approach to storytelling that we get with, you know, documentaries to this, to any sport, not just, you know, WWE stuff, but just the filtering and not asking hard questions. And, you know, I've had my issues with when Nick Khan has appeared on Bill Simmons' podcast on Spotify, and they obviously have a friendship, and some of the questions are kind of danced around, not really talked about, and so on. It's tough to hear. And, you know, it's a guy that smartly does not put himself up in tough situations and so on. But look, so he went on Stephanie's podcast. You know, the big headlines coming out of this was they were talking about Vince pretty glowingly, I would say. And I understand it must be hard for a daughter to really kind of rip into her dad, like I think many of us were hoping is going to happen. And just put yourself in that position that even if your father's done the worst things and he's accused of a lot of bad things, obviously, it must be very difficult and conflicting for a daughter, for a son-in-law to talk about their father in ways that all of us wish that they did. And, you know, they talked about Vince and Nick Khan is a big Vince McMahon guy, and that Stephanie said, you know, no one can take absolutely Vince is an empire builder. No one could take away that from him, no matter what, including himself, who is probably his biggest nemesis. And she didn't elaborate what she meant by that. Didn't talk about, obviously, you know, General Grant lawsuit or any other things that have gone on. The Ring Boys lawsuit, all the accusations, the past, hush money, all those type of things. There was nothing talked about that. So, yeah, it's, you know, podcasts like that. I don't know. I don't really love them. You know, Nick Khan talked about, you know, that he and Triple H make mistakes in business every day. And the good thing is we have one another. We can say, I think I did this. What did you think? I don't think that was a move and that they are able to pivot, that big word, right? You know, we mess this up and pivot and so forth. So, yeah. And again, he talked about, again, the social media thing, not paying attention to social media and all this stuff, which nobody believes. It's, do you pay attention? You pay attention to social media when it benefits your decision making. And then you don't pay attention to it when it doesn't. That's all we're really talking about here, right? And speaking of social, I mean, before I flip to this, if social media does not matter as much, then why they tout the views, you know, the engagement, the views, biggest BS numbers out there, by the way, like Google Trends or something. Like, there are just certain things where you have to kind of, you have to know what you're talking about in order to kind of really delve into it and say, this means something, but I don't know. They certainly aren't afraid of talking about social media when it comes to views and retweets, all the stuff they talk about. So just take all that with a very half grain of salt. On social media, speaking of it, WWE, this is for as you know, tough as Nick Khan is to kind of listen to times and some of his opinions and so on. Super successful, and one of his biggest successes is this alignment with Fanatics and WWE. And Fanatics, you've been on social media at all this weekend. You've seen all these major stars for Fanatics Fest. I don't know where this is being held this weekend, but it's a thing they do annually. They may do a couple times a year. I'm not really sure, but like, as you know, Tom Brady is there. All these huge NBA stars and stars from all the sports because they have all these deals going all these different leagues. Of course, WWE, they have affiliation there. And that's all I saw a few times I was flipping through Twitter. X yesterday was just all these social media, all these people just doing, you know, there's Seth Rollins, CM Punk confrontation, John Cena, who is clearly just, he's like, I'm not going to act like a heel 24/7. He did this thing in a punching bag where he threw work punches and everyone loved that. And, you know, it's, but they are so aligned with pop culture now, things like the Fanatics deal and all these things, they just, even the Netflix upfronts they did, the To Doom thing a couple weeks ago, they're just like, they have said, we're going to align our talents with all these other major talents and make them seem like they're just mega stars, rock stars. And they're so smart when they did that. And things like Fanatics this weekend is evidence of that. So yeah, stock up for thumbs up, thumbs down for Nick Khan this week. Thumbs up for this Fanatics deal. Thumbs down for some of his opinions on a lot of things. Speaking of thumbs down, let's get to John Jones. Talk a little bit of MMA because it's a big story. We cover this a lot on our website. Cover this guy a lot in the years. I myself have done cover this guy a lot. John Jones, the now former UFC heavyweight champion, former UFC light heavyweight champion, one of the best to ever do it, hang up the gloves, supposedly, allegedly. He said it. Dana White said it. But as we know, in pro wrestling and MMA, and boxing and so many other things, retirement is only lasts as long as that phone call you get saying, we're going to offer you a lot of money to come back. Look at Bill Goldberg coming up in just a couple weeks at Saturday night's main event, despite the fact he's basically, to paraphrase, his body's being held together by bubblegum and tape, and he's doing the best he can. But we'll talk about more about that in the weeks ahead. But John Jones is called it quits. His last fight was this past November at Madison Square Garden against Stipe Miocic. And if you want a really in-depth kind of opinion about everything that's happened and how damaging Jones's heavyweight run has been to his legacy, go to YouTube and go to Luke Thomas's YouTube channel. He has about a 10 or 12 minute video there. And Lucas has his own issues with John Jones, but you know, he's very fair and he talks about it in a way that I thought was really great and longer than we have time for here. But John Jones, his in-cage legacy up until the move to heavyweight is unparalleled, essentially undefeated. The only defeat he had was a DQ win over Matt Hamill due to a 12-6 elbow. This was in a completely different era of UFC. But he just steamrolled. And I was covering the sport intensively during so much of this time. And it was just so amazing to watch this guy just come from the prelims and just rise through. And you just would hear along the way. I mean, Dave and Brian would talk about it on Wrestling Observer Radio. You would hear about their chatter. Just this guy at light heavyweight was just looked to be unparalleled. Just lengthy, vicious, well-rounded, and seemed like this was going to be the guy. And guess what? He was the guy. And his run through light heavyweight was just, it was so fun to watch. I don't think we're ever going to see anything like that again, not because his talent was off the chain, but just because the era and the way it was and just the way the MMA was and everything. I mean, he was just demolishing guys. I mean, this run, he finally got the light heavyweight title shot against Shogun Hua in March 2011. That was after, three straight, he had five or six straight wins leading into that. It just felt like a coronation. I remember exactly where it was when he won. And it's defense after defense, the guy, taking on Lyoto Machida, Vitor Belfort, Rashad Evans, Chael Sonnen, Gustafson. And of course, the series with Daniel Cormier. And yeah, he just did defense after defense. And then, over time, kind of like 2019-ish, 2018, 2019, that's when a lot more decisions, and he finally moved to heavyweight after essentially 3 years off from 2020 to March 2023, won the heavyweight title in 2 minutes by submitting Ciryl Gane, and then he did not fight again until November 2024, which was a Stipe fight, and a lot of delays and talking. Of course, the big thing was, the interim heavyweight champion, now I'm completely blanking on his name. It'll come to me in just a second. But it's crazy you forget these things. I've been talking about this guy for two straight days. Tom Aspinall, who is now the reigning heavyweight champion after Jones retired. So he's upgraded. But essentially, he ducked that fight for over a year and a half. And Tom Aspinall, he was next. And, John Jones did not do the honors on the way out. And unfortunately, there's just this, people can put their heads in the sands about, but this really stuck out today, just how much his legacy, again, over the past couple of years, got really hurt by this heavyweight run. And that's how we're going to remember it. We'll get into legal stuff in just a minute. But if he had just, fought the Aspinall fight and retired, great. But he didn't go out the right way. And we'll see if he comes back. He's talking about Francis Ngannou. Francis Ngannou is a different organization. Dana White said he doesn't like Francis Ngannou, has no interest in really bringing him back. Of course, he's under contract with a different organization. Francis Ngannou was saying, why would I come back? Luke, I thought, made a great point on his show saying, look at the state of the heavyweight division. Why would you not want him back? He said, it's pretty bad in today's MMA. The news is always about fights not happening, legal issues, or that's kind of about it. I mean, like Conor McGregor getting busted again for punching a guy in Spain. Yeah, this situation and just it's just a lot of disappointment. It's just and promoters not wanting to bring in the top guys and wanting to make the best fights. And it's just this whole era really has been such a tough thing to kind of see from my standpoint, someone who used to watch the sport for so long. You can't talk about John Jones without talking about the legal issues. So just about, an hour or so? Couple hours after this announced, news broke from the Albuquerque, New Mexico Journal, and they revealed there's a criminal summons against Jones. Jones, a misdemeanor charge stemming from this accident that took place, car accident, in February. Why it's happening now is very strange, and the timeline's kind of odd. But a police officer was investigating a crash, and the woman had, there was a woman in the car in the passenger seat who was heavily intoxicated and had no pants on. I mean, who hasn't done that, right? Who among us? And said that John Jones is the driver. The officer called Jones. He, quote unquote, appeared to be heavily intoxicated and made statements implying his capacity to employ lethal force to third parties. The officer requested backup, and also that person also said similar threats of violence were made. And John Jones, a few days later, was interviewed, and he said the woman left his house intoxicated and called him after getting in the accident. Then said the officer he spoke with used unprofessional language and made him think wasn't legit. The woman later said that she was drinking alcohol, took mushroom at Jones's house. Next thing she remembered, she was at the scene of an accident. According to the police report, Jones called the woman 13 times from the time of the crash till 11:34 the next morning, in addition to text messages. And so Jones is due in court in late July. It's just the latest issues with John Jones. And it is like, this guy, he's just not a good guy. He's just not. And the stories of Las Vegas and the physical abuse and his kids being there and that whole story, if you want to go back in that, and he was arrested, hitting his head against a car and stuff like this. He just like McGregor, puts himself in really bad situations. These people can say all the time, I'm really a good guy, I'm persecuted, all this stuff. If you had a regular person in your life doing all these things, would you think they're good? Just bad luck? Come on. It's not just bad luck. You put yourselves in these situations. If my wife learned that there was some woman drinking alcohol and taking mushrooms here, and that'd be bad enough. But then me just allowing her to drive away, allegedly, you know? That's why I'm saying Jones is in the car as well, and he fled the scene of the accident. I mean, just not a good person. With that, unfortunately, I talked too long about John Jones. I'm out of time for this segment. I did not get a chance to chat about Mark Raimondi's great book, Say Hello to the Bad Guys, about the NWO. Did not get a chance to talk about the 5-year retrospective on Speaking Out. We'll have to save some of those things for next week. When we come back, I will look ahead at the week in wrestling, what's coming up, and what you're going to be busy doing with your eyeballs this week. Wrestling Observer Live coming right back after this. Final segment, Wrestling Observer Live. I'm Josh Nason. Thank you much for spending some time with me today as we are in rapid fire through a ton of stuff. If you liked it, let me know. At Josh Nason on Twitter, Blue Sky, also the website, WONF4W on those platforms. Well, also Facebook too. So the week ahead, boy, we get another busy one, as they always are. Monday, Raw, you heard about that show. Tuesday, NXT. Wednesday, Dynamite. Collision is being taped after Dynamite in Kent, Washington. Brian Alvarez will be in attendance. If you see him, ask for an autograph and a picture. And Collision is going to air on Thursday this week because we have Night Champions coming up, but also there is NASCAR race, I believe, on TNT Saturday. So what I think everyone assumes is the future home of AEW Collision Thursday nights is going to get it again this Thursday. Impact, of course, Thursday. Ring of Honor, Thursday. SmackDown earlier in the day. Of course, they're going to be in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, WWE is. So again, it's going to air 8 p.m. Domestically U.S. for everyone else. It's going to air on Netflix live. I think we're going to run it live on our site in terms of our coverage. We're going to talk about that. And of course, Night of Champions coming up on Saturday. Whew. Doesn't seem like a busy week because there's only one PLE, but it's a lot. A lot is always going on. And a lot more to come. Of course, full steam ahead towards July with AEW All In. Some developments happening with that. Casino Gauntlet match coming back in that match. That show. I also should mention one thing I forgot in all this show. TK really loves, Tony Khan really loves multi-man matches, multi-person matches. There was a lot on Collision. It is a fetish of his, for sure, these days. We won't talk about any other fetishes because, frankly, I don't know. But what I do know is I'm going to be back next Sunday in this very spot for Wrestling Observer Live talking about Night of Champions, all the things that happened during the week, and then some. Thank you so much for joining me. And again, my name is Josh Nason, and this is Wrestling Observer Live.